Well, the one that nobody knew was probably the best song tonight. They were all good, but I think there was more participation, which just proves something. I've said before, whenever a song leader, if he's struggling a little bit on the song, sometimes people sing better because they're trying to help. And I think, but we did learn one thing. Julie picks the songs out. Because when that came up on the screen, he looked like a deer caught in the headlights. And he said, anybody outside the Jenkins family? And I don't think Andrew did it. Huh? The Benezra family as well. That's right. You're coming in and covering yourself here now. I understand. But he didn't pick it. You could tell that when it came on the screen. So anyway, it's good. Been a good day. Been a beautiful day outside, and it's been a good day inside, and we're looking forward to next week with the big events on both on Saturday and on Sunday. And it is good that we're making efforts and taking opportunities to reach out and let people know that we're here and who we are, and to come and worship with us. And so we need to all put our best face on and our best foot forward. Next weekend is we're entertaining guests. The sermon this morning was one of a series. We'll have a couple of more on leadership and elders as we're heading towards that. I did slip up this morning, and it was called to my attention. And so I do want to correct this. I meant to say in a few weeks, and I think I said in a couple of weeks. And it's going to be longer than a couple of weeks. It's not going to be 2 weeks when you're asked to submit names, but it's not going to be very many weeks. But my couple of weeks is kind of like living in the last days. That could go for a little while yet. So anyway, we are making good progress. The committee's making good progress. And we'll be hearing from them soon. Let me just leave it that way. Soon. Y'all know who pointed that out to me. Our attorney friend that's the chairman pointed that out to me. You know, attorneys listen different than other folks. So anyway, it will be soon. Jesus, in his Sermon on the Mount, has a lot to say. Covers a lot of subjects, or a lot of dimensions, perhaps, of similar subjects. But he has a lot to say, and a lot of it really boggles the minds of his hearers. If you remember the setting, he's in the very early stages of his earthly ministry, earthly public ministry at least. And he sits down on the hillside somewhere near the Sea of Galilee, and he speaks to the crowd. And he speaks as one having authority. He speaks as no man has ever spoken before. He begins his sermon with what we call the Beatitudes. And he says some things that really kind of boggle their minds. It wasn't what they thought they might hear. He said things like, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those that mourn, those that are persecuted. Teachings that go across the grain with the crowd's way of thinking. But he spends some time with a whole section of what we refer to as the Beatitudes. And then after that, after his introduction, he moves into what we as preachers would call the body of his sermon, or perhaps the discussion portion of his sermon. And he makes a very profound statement. In fact, he's going to make this statement several times. And he's going to make this statement to introduce some points that he wants to discuss with them. And the statement, you heard it read just a moment ago, but the statement Jesus will make is, you have heard that it was said to men of old, or some translations will say to the people of long ago. But I say to you, or I tell you, and then he goes on to drop a subject on them, to drop a thought on them, and he develops that as one of the points of his sermon. If you were looking at this and breaking it down homiletically, which is a big preacher word for preaching. If you looked at it from a homiletical standpoint, he has one of his first points there. But before we get into that first point, I want to ask the question, what do you think Jesus meant? What exactly was he saying when he said, you've heard it said of old, or you've heard it said to the people long ago? But I say to you, is he disagreeing with the law of Moses? Is he disagreeing? Is he taking issue with what the prophets said? Is he saying they were wrong? No, he's not. If you read it and you put it into context, he's taking time. In fact, in the introduction to the sermon, if we back up to verse 17, chapter 5, Jesus tells them straight out. He said, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I didn't come to abolish them. He said, I came to fulfill them. So it's crystal clear that Jesus didn't disagree with the law, with the prophets, but it's just as sparkling clear that he did disagree with what they had heard through the law and through the prophets. Jesus is saying, you have heard this. You have heard it said. But he said, I'm telling you, you heard it wrong. You have interpreted it poorly. And throughout the Sermon on the Mount, at least in this section of it, he comes in and he brings clarity to what they should have heard in the first place. And he shares the intent of God, the mind of God from the beginning. And he also takes time in the introduction before he gets into this, and he tells them, verse 20, he said, for I tell you, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. So he said, you got to do better than what they've done. You've got to hear clearer and understand better than what they have told you, because the Pharisees and the teachers of the law have not been clear on it. And he said, you need to hear and obey what God always had in mind. Now, having said that, I'd like to begin tonight another Sunday night series. We'll break for next Sunday afternoon, because I promise you we're going to have a shorter service next Sunday afternoon. So we'll break next week, but we'll come back and pick it up the next week. But we're going to be looking at a series we're going to entitle, But I Say to You, and look at the things that Jesus has to say as he goes through the Sermon on the Mount in this section of it. And I want us to listen as we do that to what Jesus had to say about the mind of God and how we ought to behave. First one's in verse 21. It's already been read to you. Jesus introduces the subject of do not murder. Do not kill, depending on which version you're reading, how the translators have translated that. He said, you've heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. Any faithful Jew knew that. Any faithful Jew knew that murder was punishable by death. Exodus chapter 20, verse 13, clearly states as one of the Ten Commandments, one of the top ten, if you're looking at a top ten list, God gave to Moses on those tablets, do not murder, do not kill. Then later in Exodus chapter 21, verse 12, God follows it up and says, anyone who strikes a man and kills him shall surely be put to death. It's a capital offense. It's punishable by death. So there's no doubts in the minds of Jesus' audience that day on the side of the mountain. Most of them Jews, no doubt. They knew that murder was not only against the law, but it was punishable by death. Now, the scribes and the Pharisees if you go back and look at the time and look at the traditions that they were putting in there, they'd been writing and teaching that murderers must face judgment with God, and that was certainly true. Certainly is true. But they also were trying to circumvent this thing about execution. They were trying to avoid putting someone to death if they wanted to, if they wanted to get out of it, by coming up with a lesser charge. It was one of the very early plea bargains that took place. And so they were making it possible for murderers to avoid being killed by just saying they're going to face punishment with God. They are going to face punishment with God. They were going to face punishment with God, but the law of Moses also said they were to be executed. In fact, if some of you may, in your Bibles, you may have a footnote there in Matthew chapter 5 that says, if a man commits murder without cause. I don't know if any of you have that in the margins or at the bottom of your Bible or not. But the reason it's there in a footnote, if you have it, is because that was not in the original manuscript. That has been added. That has been suggested by the translators of whatever translation you may be looking at. And they're saying that this could be there, but if you research it, it comes from the traditions of the scribes, the Pharisees. Jesus is really clarifying what the law really said. But I think the real punch, the real point that Jesus brings up, is when he says, but I say to you, and he opens up a whole new world about killing or murder when he explains that the thought is just as dangerous as the act. The thought of committing the murder is just as dangerous with God as the act of committing a murder. Jesus doesn't just convict the action, but he also talks about the motive. Or another way of saying it, I believe Jesus is saying here that even if you don't take your brother's life physically, you may take your own life spiritually if you're not careful. Now, Jesus says that anyone who says raca to his brother, that's what a lot of the translations will say. If he says raca to your brother, he has to answer to the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin was the religious governing council of the day. I got to tell you, raca is an unusual word. Nobody that I know really knows what it means. The most common translations for it are words like worthless, good for nothing. Or my favorite that I saw this week was empty-headed. You ever see somebody or even think of yourself, I'm just empty-headed right now? But it's an Arminian term, and it's a term of contempt. It's a statement of harm, statements that tear people down. Jesus said if you're going to make those kind of statements about somebody, you're going to be accountable to the Sanhedrin, the religious governing council. But more importantly, Jesus said you're going to be accountable to God when you factor in anger, hate, contempt, and you say, you fool. He says at that point, you're not just answering to the Sanhedrin council. You're answering to God. And I believe this is the real crux of what Jesus means when he says, but I say to you. Jesus explains to them that being angry with your brother, having contempt against your brother, hate for him inside your heart, is just as big of an issue with God as what the overt murder is. And you're saying, am I hearing that right? You're telling me that that heart issue is just as bad with God as the murder? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's what Jesus said. I'm just relaying to you what Jesus is saying, you say, are you sure? Yeah, I'm sure. But if you think about it, it has always been that way. Always been that way. If you've got your Old Testaments tonight, turn back with me to Genesis chapter 4. Genesis chapter 4, let's look at the very first murder that ever occurred. First murder in history. And let's see, let's lay down what Jesus is saying in Matthew 5 next to what took place and what God said in Genesis chapter 4. You'll recall in Genesis chapter 4, you'll read about Adam and Eve's first two sons, Cain and Abel. And Genesis 4 says that Abel offered a sacrifice to God, and the Lord had favor both for Abel and for his sacrifice, for his offering. But then if you read on, it will say Cain offered a sacrifice to God, but God did not have favor on Cain nor his offering. And Cain is angry about it. He's angry with his brother. You say, how do you know that? Because I read verse 6. Read verse 6. God speaks to Cain. These are the words of God. And he says, why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? You ever see, be able to tell on people's faces when they're mad? God said, I can see it on your face. Your face is downcast. God said, if you do what's right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what's right, sin is crouching at the door. Now, King James Version will say, sin is knocking at the door. Crouching at the door, knocking at the door. God says, it desires to have you, but you can master it. You can overcome it. Now, let me point out to you that God said sin is crouching or knocking at your door, but you can overcome it. You can master it. If Cain had mastered the sin that was knocking on the door, that was crouching at the door, the murder wouldn't have taken place. You follow me? We always look to Genesis 4 and talk about the sin there being the murder. Murder is sin. But Cain was having a life and death struggle with sin before he ever committed the murder. And God said, why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? Sin is crouching at the door. Sin is knocking at the door. But Cain, you can overcome. You can master it. But he didn't. And he went on and killed his brother. But sin was there before the murder. The sin that God was warning Cain about was the anger that he had in his heart towards Abel. That sin manifested itself in the murder. So Jesus tells his listeners, he said, you've heard that it was said to people of old, people long ago, do not murder. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But he said, I'm telling you, anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. He's already committed the murder in his heart. That's consistent. That's exactly what God warned Cain about in the long ago. Anger is a problem of the heart. And it manifests itself in overt ways, such as murder and other things that can happen. But Jesus says the same way a murderer faces judgment, someone with anger is going to face a higher judgment with God. And then Jesus goes on in this passage and he tells us something else about anger, the kind of anger that leads to murder. He says it has a direct effect on our worship. That kind of anger affects our worship. Because the very next thing Jesus says is, therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you. Leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother. Then come back, offer your gift. Matthew chapter 5, verses 23, verse 24. Once again, Jesus appeals to the Jewish mindset here and the Jewish tradition of the people that he was speaking to on the mountainside. History shows us that the Jews were used to offering sacrifices to God on the altar with the assistance of the priest. They would bring their sacrifice to the priest. The priest would administer it, and the Jews would stand nearby, and they would worship God. Jesus now, when he speaks to us of the new kingdom, he instructs us, the church, to do a similar thing, but we don't bring a sacrifice to a priest to administer it for us, but we bring our sacrifice of praise to worship. And we place it on the altar of our hearts, and of our lives. And Jesus says we are to be, and Paul says we are to be living sacrifices. And so we bring our sacrifice of praise, our hearts, our lives, and we bring them to worship. Jesus says, when you get here and you're ready to offer your gift, your praise, your hearts, your life, and he says, your brother has something against you, you leave your gift and you go be reconciled with him. He says you put your worship on hold until you can go and make things right. Then you come back and you worship. You see, anger, a bad attitude gets in the way of your worship. Now, we can shrug it off all we want to. We can say, I'm going to ignore that Jesus said that. It can't be that bad. But that's what it says right there in your Bible that you're looking at tonight. In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus says your anger, your contempt, your hate, your ugliness with the brethren can affect your worship. And he says you need to get it fixed. Now, this statement he makes here in Matthew chapter 5 applies when you have wronged someone else. And he says, you need to go, if you're the guilty party, then you need to go make things right. But Matthew chapter 18, Jesus picks this thought back up, and he says there, if your brother sins against you, go and talk to him, win him over, bring him back. Jesus says you still have the responsibility. Doesn't matter whether you're the one that wronged him or whether you are the innocent party when it's clearly his fault and he has sinned against you. Jesus said in either scenario, it's important, it's essential that brethren not be angry with each other. It's essential that brethren get along. And he makes it quite clear that we can only offer true worship vertically when we have repaired things horizontally. Now, sometimes I think it's a bit scary that we spend so much time in the church and in our worship assemblies talking about worshiping in spirit and in truth. We need to do that. I'm not saying we stop doing that. But while we're talking about worshiping in spirit and in truth, we spend so little time talking about the love that we ought to have for the brethren. And the anger that many times is in our hearts. You see, Jesus would say this is just as much a part of worshiping in spirit and truth as anything else. As anything else. And if I choose to ignore it, That's not a very good scenario. Jesus is talking to us, and he says it's better to leave worship in the most sacred moment than to remain in worship and delay reconciliation with your brother. He said that's more important than worship at this moment, because it hinders, it hampers, it affects your worship. And then Jesus concludes this portion of his sermon by offering an illustration that they could all understand. Verse 25. He said, settle matters quickly with your adversary who's taking you to court. Do it with him while you're still with him on the way, or he may hand you over to the judge. And the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. He said, I tell you the truth, you won't get out until you've paid the last penny. Jesus offered an illustration of the courtrooms of men. And he said, here's pretty good advice. If you can settle the dispute you have with someone on the way to the courthouse, do it before you get there. And the ability to settle it is taken out of your hands and put into the hands of the judge and the jury. And you lose control of the ball. I don't know how many of you have been in business for yourself or been in a position with whoever you work for to handle consumer complaints or not, but I'm going to tell you something that I learned very early in dealing with consumers. And that is that when one of them's got a complaint, when one of them's mad at you, this is good advice. Because I don't care how much paperwork you've got. I don't care how many places they've signed that they bought it as is with no warranty. When you get before the judge, he's going to have compassion for the consumer. So I learned very quickly, I never made a nickel at the courthouse. Always cost me money when I got to the courthouse. Even if I won, it cost me money by the time I paid the legal fees and the attorneys at the courthouse. Jesus said, if you've got the ability to settle this before you get to the magistrate or the judge, you ought to do it. You ought to do it. Put it in the context Jesus is talking about. The context here is leaving your gift at the altar and going and handling, reconciling with your brother. What Jesus is doing here, he is giving us an illustration that they could understand, that we can understand in our courtrooms. But he said you need to remember this when you're dealing with each other as brethren. If you've got disputes, if you are mad, if you are angry, if you are upset, whether you have been wronged or whether you have been the offender, Jesus would say, settle them among yourselves before you go to the judge, lest you be handed over to him for judgment. And Jesus is referring to the Lord God Almighty. That's the judge. And he says, as we are on our way to that judgment, every day in this life that God gives us, until he says it's over and time will be no more, Jesus said, don't wait till then. You settle this thing now, while you can settle it among yourselves, because if the judge, God has to settle it for you, he said, you'll never get out till you pay the last penny. There will be a judgment on it. So Jesus said, you've heard it said of old, but I say to you, you must have misunderstood. You've misunderstood what God meant. You've misunderstood what God meant about the overt acts such as murder he was also extremely concerned with the matters of the heart. Anger, contempt, hate. Because they will affect your behavior, they will affect your worship, and they will affect your salvation with God. Tonight's invitation is a little bit different. I'm not offering an invitation to you tonight to come down these aisles. If you need to, if you're ready to be baptized or you have a real need, go ahead and come. I'm not telling you not to. But that's not the motivation here. The invitation tonight is to encourage you, each one of you. If you have anything that needs to be reconciled with anybody, then you go do that this week. You take care of that this week. The invitation, the response, is not here as we're singing the invitation song. The response is to go do whatever you need to do to make things right with whoever there may be friction with, stress with, whether you're the guilty party, whether you're the innocent party. Jesus says you need to do that, then come back and offer your sacrifice to God. So that's the call. That's the invitation. That's what you need to do. It's what I need to do. It's what we all need to do before it has to go before the Lord. If you would, let's stand and let's sing.